This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th, and it's making me feel joy and sadness and anger, definitely some disgust, and I think a little fear.
Really?
But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, only in theaters June 14th. Get tickets now.
Let's go!
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Bingetown TV. This is Brian here with Paul and producer Dave. Today, we have episode one of season two of the Disney Plus series, The Mandalorian. This episode is going to be chapter nine, entitled The Marshal. And it was a good one. It was the start of season two. We just did the preview episode. That got me amped for this episode. And I enjoyed it a lot, guys.
Yeah, I was also in the preview episode and got to say, this first episode lived up to the hype. Not much else to add on other than great episode. We got a lot of action, which is what I was really hoping for.
Yeah, I forgot how much I love Mandalorian. I mean, it's just so good. I wasn't on the season one recap episode, but, you know, my resume, haven't seen Clone Wars, Clone Wars, haven't seen the other one, but, you know, all the movies, saw Revenge of the Sith in theaters.
Yeah, way back when.
A million times after.
Yeah.
So seeing a show like this bring back Boba Fett's armor and just like little things like that. Oh, my God. So awesome. Good.
The great thing about this show is that it has something for the people that have only seen the movies, and then it also has some payoff for the people that have explored some of the expanded universe. So, and that's what we talked about a lot on the preview, is how much we like that about this show, that it can explore those elements.
Exactly. To go off what you were just saying, basically the universe is just so big that, you know, having Easter eggs in all these episodes is very doable because Star Wars has been around for almost a little over two decades now. So Easter eggs are always, you know, fun to see in these kind of shows, and definitely a huge one with Boba Fett's armor.
For sure. We ready to get going?
Of course.
Hell yeah. All right. So we get Mando walking with little baby Yoda in his little floating cradle, and it's nighttime. They're walking through this downtown dirt road, and you kind of see little glowing eyes of what might be some wolves or some dogs.
That'll come back into play.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It'll definitely come back. So they end up going, knocking on this low-key door. A bodyguard comes out. Mando goes, "I'm here to see Gore Koresh."
Yeah, and it looks like kind of a shady underground operation just from the start. But we enter into this, we call it the fighting pit, I guess. It's kind of like a boxing
ring.
It was like a
I was saying that on the preview episode. It kind of looked like some kind of fancy box. Well, not fancy, but yeah, boxing ring.
And there are these two Gamorreans going at it with like battle axes. It's a pretty cool thing. I would pay to watch
really
that.
It was really cool.
Yeah, whenever I see them, I just think you're dead. Like whenever your Gamorreans are in episode, you either
these are massive compared to the, you could tell too from the, like just comparing them to the people in the stands, they were huge.
Yeah.
I think Jabba used them as like just his cronies, his henchmen. They're muscle.
They're all muscle.
You're getting eaten by like the Sarlacc.
Yeah.
But Mando kind of like walks past the boxing ring and sits down to this guy, turns out to be Gore Koresh. And what Mando's looking for is he heard that Gore Koresh has information about the whereabouts of another Mandalorian. And obviously our boy Mando is looking for other Mandalorians to help him get baby Yoda back to his kind.
Mandalorian have a lot of they're known to have a lot of information. They have a tight-knit network of, you know, secrecy essentially. Yeah. And
not only that, but that's kind of his family, you know. Those are people that would give him help. Right. So he is definitely seeking them out, because I wouldn't know where to start. Yoda's kind.
Yeah, we also get more to that when he reunites with the mechanic next scene. But Koresh, right off the bat, is like a total douche. He is saying, you know, "Are you a betting man? Are you gambling man?"
Yeah.
Mando says, "No, not when I have to." When he says, "I'll bet you the something about like I'll give you the information."
It was like the male Gamorrean fighter versus the female one, and he was basically betting on the male one, I think.
Oh, he said, "My guy's not doing too well."
Yeah, so he bet for his guy. He said, "I bet you that the other Gamorrean is going to die in the next minute and a half. If you wager your Beskar armor, I'll put up the information of the whereabouts of the other Mandalorian. And Mando says, hey, I'm willing to pay you for the information, but my Beskar's off the table.
Obviously,
I just told you I'm not a betting man. And the Gamorrean says, well, neither am I. Whips out a blaster, kills the other Gamorrean, and then ambushes Mando, has him at gunpoint, and says, you know, now you're going to die and I'm going to take the armor.
Technically, he won the bet.
He won the bet, technically.
And Koresh's bodyguards are all behind him. There's four blasters pointing at Mando right
now. And they're close enough that they get between the armor. So he has it like at his throat, and Mando says, tell me where the Mandalorians are and I won't kill you.
I thought you said you weren't a gambler.
And we see Mando kind of activate the whistling birds from season one,
and Baby Yoda goes into a hiding.
He closes his little shell thing.
I like that. Mando kicks it away, basically.
Mando unleashes the whistling birds, and they take out all four of the men wielding the blasters against him. So the cronies are out of commission, and then he has some hand-to-hand combat. Takes on like three guys at the same time. He like shoots out blades. He just kicks their ass.
The one thing I wanted to say is the one dude was like punching him in the face, and I was like, dude, that's just gotta hurt your fist.
I was gonna say that. I was like, your boss was just talking about how valuable Beskar armor is, and you're gonna punch it with your bare hand.
And he wasn't like feeling it really. Like he was consistently swinging for the fences.
At one point, Mando sees he's about to get punched in the head, and he leans into it. He headbutts it, and the dude's like, oh, my head.
That's when he feels it.
Probably breaks it.
The armor is so cool. I know that's the Mandalorian thing, but it's so cool.
But this is exactly, I mean, we had to assume that season one or season two was going to kick off with the dope fighting scene, and we got it right off the bat.
Of course.
And I was hoping you were going to finish or say that other line. So Koresh says, I thought you weren't a gambler. And Mando says, I'm not. And then the whistling birds go out and take everybody.
He's not a bet. He knew he was gonna win that fight.
He's so cool. So
you teed it up for me. I'm so sorry. I didn't hit it out of the park. I'm usually better than that. You're better than that, Bonnie.
So while this is going on, while Mando's taking out the bodyguards, Koresh is waddling at the front door. I wouldn't even call it running.
He gets
to the street. And then Mando gets out there, does the classic Y around the ankles, ties him up. He's hanging upside down.
A lamppost, And Gore says, hey, I'll give you the information as long as you promise not to kill me. And Mando says, I promise you will not die by my hand.
Also true.
true, for sure. So Gore tells him that the Mandalorian he knows is on Tatooine in a city called Mos Pelgo.
And Moss, I would say, I think it's
Mos Pelgo. Yeah, you're right. Mos Pelgo.
Mando was saying, I've been on Tatooine for a long time, plenty of times. I've never seen a Mandalorian. And Koresh says, my information is good. I swear it by the Gotra, which don't know what that is. We were just talking about like the little things, the exclamations they throw out. Could if anybody knows, leave a comment.
This is what that's one of the things you would find 3 hours deep in a rabbit hole on Wikipedia. It's just, what is it? The Gotra?
We'll get there.
It probably has like four pages or something.
We'll get there one day.
So Mando now has the information. He shoots out the lamp. He's tied up to a lamppost, so he shoots out the light and just starts walking away like a badass. Gore Koresh is saying, you can't leave me here, Mando, come on. And then we see the hyenas or the dog creatures, the red eyes, just kind of circle around Gore Koresh and then start to eat him.
Bad ass
scene.
He walks away, no fucks given.
We get the triumphant music.
Dun, dun.
Oh my god, and how good is the music? I just listened to the preview episode. I don't think we once talked about the music.
The
music in this show is just the scoring. Chef's kiss. So we get Mando and Baby Yoda pulling up on Tatooine, specifically Mos Eisley, and this is where we get a familiar face, right, Dave?
Yes, sir. We found out her name is Motto, the mechanic, or Pelly Motto, actually. But yeah, I figured from season one, we were going to get a little bit more of her. It's the only mechanic Mando knows and can trust, really. And she's a good babysitter.
Yeah, she sees Baby Yoda and she goes, oh, thank the Force.
Who wouldn't have that exact reaction when seeing Baby Yoda? You know, she's like, thank God he came back alive, or thank Gontra, you know, he's alive or whatever.
And how about Mando? The droids go up to, maintain the ship, and the curly-haired mechanic, what's her name?
Motto.
She's like, hey, you guys know he doesn't like droids. Mando, turning over a new leaf. Yeah, no, absolutely. It's fine. Let them go.
We call it character development here at Bingetown TV.
Hell yeah.
Absolutely.
And that was a really cool scene. I like, it was really touching seeing him. Rest in peace, yeah. IG-11, baby.
Absolutely. Still in our hearts. I think she says something kind of interesting. She says, if this thing ever divides or buds, I will gladly pay for the offspring. Yeah. And that's just a testament to how little anybody knows about what he is, what kind of alien he is, what they don't care.
Nobody,
yeah, he's just so cute. they just love him. And...
Exactly.
So Mando's asking, do you know where Mos Pelgo is? Mos. And she says, man, I haven't heard that name since basically the Empire fell.
Haven't heard that name in years.
Basically, it got run over with bandits after the Empire fell. So she doesn't go there. She hasn't even left the walls, she said.
Yeah, the whole planet of Tatooine has kind of just been a lawless wasteland for a while. So it's definitely dangerous outside the walls of Mos Eisley. But yeah, Mos Pelgo is kind of in dire straits. We get another droid, R5, comes over to show Mando an old map of Tatooine from before the war. And we have the cities of Mos Eisley, Mos Espa, and then Mos Pelgo. But there isn't really a picture of Mos Pelgo. However, we get
the
our
general
girl.
Area of
yeah,
it,
it's kind of weird. The other
she
two
mentioned
cities
that it was a mining, it was like a mining center or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, so it's a real small operation, and it's probably just gotten smaller and smaller since people feel not protected there for bandits or what have you. But it's a smaller town.
And Mando asks if she still has that old speeder bike, which she does. She says it's a little rusted, yeah. But speeder bikes, regardless of the age, are fucking sweet. So
absolutely. And we get the cut of Mando speeder biking over to Mos Pelgo. We kind of have a flash where he camps out with Tusken Raiders overnight in passing. Shout out Queel, because our boy Mando didn't like the Tusken Raiders before he met up with Queel, the original journey across the Dune Sea, man. Queel showed him the way.
It's adding character development.
Absolutely.
How he hated droids. He didn't like the Tusken Raiders, but here he is.
Yeah, so Mando arrives at Mos Pelgo, and he kind of slowly just speeder bikes through the center of town, and he's kind of receiving a lot of questionable stares from the townsfolk.
Like
just
an old Western.
Yeah.
Riding through town exactly. On my horse.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah, and that's that phrase sounds weird. Slowly speeder biking.
But it makes sense.
It does.
Yeah,
it's
like an oxymoron.
And where does he go? To the bar, of
course.
It's
just some random bar, cantina. Yeah. You're always going to the cantina.
Yeah.
This whole episode was very Western. That's a good word, because the character he's about to meet is pretty much just a cowboy.
Oh, and that kind of goes back to what I was saying on the preview too, that episode where they're in that small, like third world kind of village. And it was a take on like almost like a samurai movie.
Very
and
true.
Now we're getting the cowboy kind
he
of scheme.
Did bring that up on the preview.
So just a nice ode to that.
So Mando walks into the bar and he's kind of talking to the bartender, says, yeah, you ever seen a Mandalorian around here? He would be the only guy that literally looks exactly like me.
The guy's face at the bar was so he was like, huh, like I'm not sure.
He said describe him.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, dude, he said literally that. Have you ever seen anything like what's going on here? But anyway, and then the bartender really doesn't get a chance to fully answer.
Yeah, he says,
and then we get
this, that's the only one I've seen.
Well, yeah, the marshal.
The marshal. Yeah, he calls him the marshal.
Yeah, the marshal. Enter this character Cobb Vanth, and he is fully decked out in some very iconic Boba Fett armor.
Yeah, we know that armor.
Fucking cool is that? Pardon my French, but it is so cool.
Yeah, should we be doing this PG if it's Disney?
I don't know.
Podcast isn't Disney.
Yeah,
man.
Podcast
not yet. Not
true.
Yet.
Shout out Disney. We'll give you some love.
I mean, don't want to burn that bridge.
No.
It could be PG-13.
So cool. I mean, Cobb Vanth at the door. He just looks at the bartender and he goes, two snorts of Spotchka, please.
Yeah.
Right away it's not Boba Fett, obviously. Yeah. Like we assume Boba Fett's dead.
Well, we know he's not a Mandalorian because the first thing he does is take off his
that
helmet,
was another thing.
Which
too.
As we find out more about the character, I think was a sign of respect. He took it right off and let him know, hey, I'm not, you know, the Mandalorian, I'm not trying to be.
First thing he says is, I've never met a real Mandalorian before.
100%. I really like Cobb.
I like that mentioned that, actually, because all I was thinking that it was kind of, it wasn't meant to be insulting, but Mando took it as insulting when he first met, because it's like, who's this guy offering a drink to me, like taking off the Mando armor? And we'll get to it, I guess, in a little bit. But
so this is quote unquote the marshal of this small little western town of Mos Pelgo. His name is Cobb Vanth. And he says to Mando, when I saw you walk in here, I assumed only one of us would be walking out just by the looks of you. And then I took a glance at Baby Yoda and I thought maybe there's more to this Mandalorian than meets the eye. Cobb says that he bought the armor from some Jawas, because that's the first question that Mando would ask him. Where'd you get this Mandalorian armor? Bought it off the Jawas. And Mando immediately gets a little bit aggressive. He says, take it off or I will.
Yeah, he's, like I said, he's insulted basically at this point that someone who's not a Mandalorian is wearing his, you know, famous armor.
Yeah.
So he's definitely getting a little defensive. And right as before, we're about to get a little bar scene fight.
It was classic Western standoff, yeah, I would say.
Yeah,
just
exactly.
Adding to the Western theme, but continue.
Yeah, we start to see some rumbling in the bar. They kind of walk out of the bar. We see it's kind of affecting the whole area. And lo and behold, there's something in the ground. And it's big. It's a Jaws-like character. And I think Motto had actually mentioned it back at Mos Eisley, saying, you know, be careful of the crate dragons.
Yeah.
Was anybody else getting SpongeBob Texas?
No, I wanted to specifically mention that it's an Alaskan bullworm.
Alaskan, that's what it is.
Yeah,
I didn't think that once, but that's exactly what it is.
The first thing I
what an episode.
Especially when they arrive at the hideout, I'm like, okay, this is straight out of SpongeBob right now.
Yeah.
But yeah, we get introduced to the infamous crate dragon.
It slithers right through the center of town, the same path that Mando took, coincidentally, and then just emerges from the sand and just eats the creature
called?
Is known as a bantha. It's kind of it's like a small woolly mammoth or something.
Yeah, it's like a baby woolly mammoth. It's got some meat on
it,
which attracts
the
crate dragons.
I said it in the preview. They do a very good job of creating the flora and the fauna from each of these planets.
Yeah,
and that's it looks cheesy but cool at the same time. You know what I mean?
When the crate dragon swallowed the bantha whole, it was just like, even right now talking about it, it was just such a really cool scene to see.
It was like the Kraken going up and getting the
ship. Exactly. Yeah.
Underneath water.
Exactly.
And Cobb Vanth looks over and he goes, maybe we can work something out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then he goes on to say, if you help me kill this crate dragon that has been attacking us and picking off our banthas forever, then I will give you the armor.
He also says in passing, the armor has helped me take on the bandits and the sand people, which is the first glimpse we get that he is kind of a protector of the town more than a bandit terrorizing the town. So the armor helps him take on bandits and sand people, but he needs help with the crate dragon.
He has a set of codes and morals that he stands by. He's not all bad.
And Mando's like, hey, that's easy. I'll just fly over it and kill it with my ship.
Oh, true. Yeah.
Cobb Vanth is like, hey, no, can't do that. It senses the vibrations. So Mando's like, okay, where does it live? Not that far. I'll show you. Mm-hmm. So two bros just speeder biking away across the desert. Which was that you or Smith who was like speeder biking across a desert?
Speed Tom's
looks
that
like
was me.
The most fun thing in the world. And I agree
100%.
It would be so relaxing, just all that open field of just going as fast as you want. I'm all in.
You're not gonna fall over. And and they get on they get a little backstory here. He goes, you know,
I have the quote if you want.
Yeah.
So this is Cobb and the city's flashback is what we're getting right here. And the quote that Cobb tells him is, the town was on its last legs. It started when we got news of the second Death Star blowing up. The Empire pulled out of Tatooine and the occupation was over. That very night, the mining collective moved in and Mos Pelgo became a slave town overnight. So the Empire pulled out because the Death Star got blown up, and then a mining collective just moved in and they were right back to an occupation, if not worse.
Way worse, honestly.
Yeah.
Because the miners that came in, it just lit up the bar right away.
Yeah. So and Cobb kind of escapes that mass execution at the bar with the bartender. Is that the same bartender that we saw this episode? That's awesome.
Yeah. He helps him out.
Yeah.
He ends up going hiding behind one of the miners' beaters. And he ends up grabbing a Camtono.
Yeah. Is that a real word or a Star Wars word?
I think that's just a Star Wars word. I don't think that's a real word.
I love that word.
Yeah.
And I love those things because that's what he got the Beskar from.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In episode three. His name was like just the client or something, right?
Yeah. It was
just the client. We don't know his name. He's dead. We'll never know his name.
His voice. I don't know if you guys talked about this. You ever
we
hear
did not.
His voice in the Rick and Morty episode of where it's Intergalactic Cable. Three, I think, or two, and they need. Oh, why can't I think of the father's name?
Jerry.
They need Jerry's penis to save this guy's life,
right?
And he won't give it up. And this actor voices the guy who's like, I've seen humans. It's my penis. Every time I heard his voice, that's all I could think
that's
of.
That's fun. I didn't know that.
Yeah, he makes his rounds. He's just such a unique voice.
Did you make that connection on your own?
Yeah.
That is so
funny. I didn't even double check
that's
it.
That's impressive.
Yeah. It could be wrong.
Because that's like a very small part of Rick and Morty. I never would have recognized
impressive.
That.
Yeah, that's very impressive.
Where were we?
Yeah, we were at Cobb escaping the bar, yes, from the mass execution, and he grabs the Cam Tono that he just grabbed it because it was the first thing he saw.
It could have been food.
Out.
It could have been water.
Yeah, and he said, to my surprise, it contained silicax crystals, which don't really know anything about them other than that they're super, super
rare.
Worth a lot of money. Yeah.
So he is currently wandering the desert when he's about to pass out. He's basically dying of starvation and dehydration when a sand crawler and the Jawas pick him up. And, when he's in the sand crawler, he's kind of drinking a bunch of water. They open up a Camp Toe?
Camp Tono.
Camp Tono. And it's, like you said, the silicax crystals. And they're very interested in it. They're offering him a bunch of things that he doesn't really want, and he looks over.
Yeah, they offered their finest in exchange.
Yeah, they offer a droid, they offer a fancy gun, but he looks over and he sees Boba Fett's armor and he's like, I'll trade you for that. So just to put in perspective, we know that silicax is worth more than Beskar, which is already worth a lot.
I'd be pissed if I didn't bring up that when he found the silicax crystals in the flashback, it cut to current time and he said, I guess every once in a while both suns shine on a womp rat's tail. Yeah. And he gives him a little smirk and then it's right back to the flashback.
I love that he makes a bunch of reference to womp rats because it's on Tatooine.
Yeah, of course. So does Mato too. And that's the Wikipedia rabbit hole I got down last night, that they're pretty good about using them regionally.
Do you think
correctly?
Do you think Cobb Vanth picks off Womp Rats with his T-16 back home?
Yeah.
Probably with like a with like a T-18 or something. But upgrades. A little upgraded. Yeah.
So he gets Boba Fett's armor and he's able to go back to Mos Pelgo and
Mos
Pelgo. It's just the spelling.
I know. It's like Los in Spanish. Yeah.
So he looks like a total cowboy walking in to this town run over by bandits.
Nods to the bartender. He's like, all right, get out of here.
Yeah.
And then just starts lighting everybody up. Agent One screams. Agent Two screams. He was killing all the agents.
You get a little bit of classic Star Wars aim here where it's like, I feel like they definitely had a lot of openings and like it was just like a chest plate, like a wrist guards and stuff like that. Like they had a lot of places they hit, but they do hit the armor and it shows that he came out absolutely unscathed, totally fine, and shoots the rest of them.
Yeah, so
it was a really cool scene.
He uses the armor just to liberate the town, but he gets this awesome kill shot with the jetpack missile.
I was going to say.
They kind of entered this transport vehicle and they just start fleeing the city, and he just takes him out with this missile that comes out of his jetpack.
I love when the scouter just drops and he lines it up. It's so cool.
It was really cool.
Yeah,
not much else to say about it.
It's so weird how he just bends over.
Yeah, it was weird. I was thinking that too, but I mean, it still looked amazing.
Well, that's the only way you can like launch it, a missile that's coming out of your jetpack. You know, you would have to kind of like lean forward.
It's the best whenever they use it because it was basically all cosmetic. It just for the looks and like the early movies.
We never saw it. Yeah, put to use.
So now.
Now we see the damage it can do.
So rewarding.
And it does a little bit of damage to the Krayt Dragon, but again, we'll get there.
So, and that's the end of the Cobb Vanth flashback. Back and we cut back to Cobb and Mando speeding through, and they're kind of in this canyon at the moment, and they hear a distant growling going on, so they immediately get off their bikes and prepare for combat. They draw their weapons, and these kind of big hyena looking things, the name of the animal in the Star Wars universe is called a Massif, and a pack of these Massifs approach Mando and Cobb.
That's not very creative. That's just taking a T out of Massif.
Yeah, I was literally just thinking that it's a
Mastiff. It was kind of lazy.
I wasn't sure if B-Thompson was like pronouncing wrong.
Now,
or if that was
two S's, two F's, Massif.
So Cobb's freaking out. He's looking at these dogs and he's getting a little worried. Mando walks out there, speaks a little Tusken Raider and starts petting the dog or petting the Massif like he's a dog. It's amazing. He's like wagging his tail.
I have pets it like it's a little pupper. Yeah. Like honestly.
It's so cool.
And
so,
that's when the Tusken Raiders come out.
Yeah, the Tusken Raiders reveal themselves. They were just chilling behind rocks, probably just seeing if these people were willing to reason with them or if they were just going to be hostile towards them. And luckily Mando was there to be reasonable with the Tuskens. Shout out Queel again.
Yeah. Is fluency in Tusken really saving their arses right now?
Mm-hmm.
So,
and Mando communicates with them using sign language and gathers that they also want to kill the Krayt dragon. So, mm-hmm. you know, their missions line up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so they, I'm pretty sure they, this is where they lead them to the actual hideout of the Krayt dragon, which is so actually
first there's a little scene at the Tusken Raider camp where
somebody's brushing the Banta's teeth.
Yeah, that was funny. I like that scene.
Yeah, we have baby Yoda kind of interacting with a Massif too, mm-hmm. and he just kind of does that baby cooing. I love having subtitles on for the cooing.
Baby cooing.
And then we get one of the Tuskens crushes, I don't know, some type of fruit.
It's a black melon.
Black melon.
Is a thing, yeah. Yeah, and I looked at the wiki.
Tells Cobb to drink it. And he's like, it smells horrible and absolutely disgusting. And Mando's translating. And he says, the Tuskens are saying, first you steal all their water and now you offend them by not drinking it. Now Cobb's getting all defensive. They stand up. They got in a shouting match a little bit. And Mando, instead of shooting a gun up in the air to get their attention, he chooses a flamethrower. And they're all like,
well,
all
he's one of the few people that has a flamethrower, you know?
We better listen to this guy who's literally throwing fire right now.
Yeah, they shut up really quickly.
Mm-hmm. And he just reminds them, we're all on the same team.
I got it in there.
A little sign language too.
Dave is fluent in Tuscan.
Did you guys, real quick, on a little tangent, do you guys ever hear the theory that Tusken Raiders at the pod race from Phantom Menace were actually time traveling Tusken Raiders trying to kill their version of baby Hitler? So there wasn't a complete genocide against their race, meaning
Darth Vader,
Anakin. They were trying to kill Anakin.
I have never heard that, but that's hilarious.
That's funny. I mean, totally obviously, definitely not true.
I really like the Tuskens, that's funny. Honestly.
They're just always there.
Yeah, there you go. That's a little better.
But Mando reminds them they're all on the same team. Just relax for the next 24 hours and then we can go our separate ways and be done with this Krayt dragon and each other.
The main thing is, how do we kill it?
Yeah. Yes. Fun fact about the black melons, by the way, Ben Kenobi, while in exile on Tatooine, once tried to sell these during a great drought. But nobody wanted to drink them because they smelled horrible. Oh. Ben Kenobi knew that it would like help them out. So he tried to sell them.
Love having the expert on the pod.
So cool.
That's awesome.
Whenever you hear something in the show that you don't know, just look it up. Wikipedia it.
And it'll come up.
Yeah.
So after realizing that they just need to kill it, set their differences aside, and they need to kill the Krayt dragon.
Now we get to
the Tuskens bring them there. And it's one Tusken Raider bringing out a Bantha right in front of this cave. And we get a bunch of little details that are just so cool in world building. Mando is translating there and he's saying they say it sleeps. It lives in an abandoned Sarlacc pit. Cobb goes, there's no such thing as an abandoned Sarlacc pit. There is if you eat the Sarlacc, which is just insane.
And we already know from what Star Wars movie was it?
It would be episode 6, that one.
Yeah, so we already know that the Sarlacc is a menace in itself. So if something was able to take down a Sarlacc, then this is not going to be an easy mission.
Yeah, the Sarlacc is what ate Boba Fett. So,
yeah.
Some other really cool information we get here. Mando is still translating. He says they studied the digestion cycle for generations and they feed it to keep it asleep. And that little detail I just think is so cool. I mean, the Tuskens, they're barbarians, but they're pretty smart.
They know they're keeping
track. Resourceful, man. And Mando has, it seems like Mando has a very strong appreciation for them and their kind because they are rugged, resourceful. Like, and
resourceful is a great word. Especially at the end of the episode.
And we know that most people are not fans of Tusken Raiders. So the fact that Mando is able to be the bridge is impressive.
So the Tusken Raider starts doing the classic Tusken yell into the cave and turns around, starts booking it.
Didn't run soon enough in my mind. Like definitely the moment he yelled, he should have started. Yeah. The moment he yelled, he should have started
that
running.
On him.
Yeah. 100%.
They're resourceful, but they're rugged. They're
sometimes,
smart.
Yeah. Sometimes they can be a little stupid, but he yells, he kind of stands there. And then once he hears the dragon roar, starts to run and the dragon comes out and we're thinking that it's going to go for the Bantha, but it's a little more agitated at the Tusken Raider and just swallows that guy whole, like, completely ignoring the Bantha.
Honestly, it's because the Bantha is just vibing. Yeah, he's just like chilling anything. There and the dude is the live prey, like booking it. So
Never turn your back on a predator.
The Krayt dragon could smell his fear.
Yeah, and
he
so
was
that
pissed that he woke him up as well.
That terrified Cobb Vanth and the Mandalorian a little
bit. Fun fact from this scene, they are viewing this go down through a pair of binoculars that I'm like 99% sure were the same binoculars that they had to give the Tusken Raiders. It was your favorite character, Toro Calican. Do you remember they had to give the binoculars to the Tusken Raiders to let them cross their homelands, the Dune Seas?
Oh my
same
God.
Pair.
Dude.
That's actually awesome.
Dave Filoni,
that's
so cool. Easter, right? Dave Filoni and John Favreau. Oh man. They know what they're doing.
Oh, awesome, dude. It makes me so happy that this series and this franchise is in good hands with
exactly.
Those two.
Incredible
Don't make
writing.
Me eat those words, but yeah, they're
that's awesome. I didn't know that.
They're checking all the boxes.
That's so cool. After the Krayt dragon chomped on the raider, they kind of fall back and they start working on a plan. They have a little scale model of the Krayt dragon.
It's not to scale.
Yeah. Cobb said, no, oh, there's no way. What are the bones?
Yeah.
Mando's, that's a Krayt dragon. It's way too big. It's not to scale. He does a little. It's the scale.
It's the scale. And then
there's a few little pebbles surrounding the skeleton of the Krayt dragon. And then the Tusken kind of just starts dumping
a little
like
more,
15
a few
more. And Cobb's just like, all right, that's more like it. Where are they getting these reinforcements? And Mando just turns to him. I volunteered your village.
Yep. But Cobb didn't really have any quarrels with that.
It was going to happen. Yeah.
He knew the only way to beat this is if the villagers help. So
which brings us right back to Mos Pelgo. And immediately Cobb's saying like the villagers aren't going to go for this. They're not going to be down for joining the Tuskens. They've been raiding us for as long as anybody can remember. And then we enter into the bar where the entire village has kind of gathered, and Cobb and Mando are standing at the front kind of addressing them. Cobb says the Mandalorian has agreed to help us slay the Leviathan in exchange for returning this armor to its ancestral home. We can't take on the Krayt dragon alone, and the Sand People have agreed to help us. And the crowd hates it. The crowd absolutely hates it.
For the reasons that you said. Exactly. They've been raiding us for a while. They've killed countless of us. Why would we help with them?
Cowboys don't mix with Indians.
Yeah,
exactly. Exactly. And then we get Mando. I actually loved what he says to them as an outsider that just makes too much sense for anybody to deny. He says, I know these people. They're brutal. But so is the Dune Sea. They have survived for thousands of years in these sands, and they know the Krayt dragon better than anyone here. They are raiders, it's true, but they also keep their word. We have struck a deal. If we are willing to leave them the carcass and its ichor, they will stand by our side in battle and vow never to raise a blaster against this town until one of you breaks the peace.
And the bartender just nods and he's like, damn.
They're all that checks all the boxes.
Tensions were high, but now I think the villagers kind of see that, yes, we need to work together.
So the villagers are on board, if not begrudgingly, but they're on board. And as they're kind of just packing up all their supplies to go on this expedition to take on the Krayt dragon, we have this awesome shot of the Tuskens arriving on their banthas.
It's in their iconic, you know, single file line. Like they're not in, you know, they're all lined together.
And as we know, they do tied their numbers.
And as
that's amazing.
But as whatever his name, fuck me, we can just cut this. I was going to say the guy from what's the Adam Sandler? No, it's Adam Sandler football movie. The McDonald's
Longest Yard.
Yeah.
Cheeseburger Eddie.
Cheeseburger Eddie, in his famous words, he says, there goes the neighborhood when they collide. But that's not relevant. We had to cut all that just to get to that point.
I love it.
We had to cut all that to get to this point.
Keep it in.
There goes the neighborhood.
So the villagers. Go ahead.
I was just going to say the villagers are working with the Tusken Raiders. They're moving bombs, kind of packing banthas, getting ready for their trek. One of the Tusken Raiders drops a bomb, and of course the villagers freak the fuck out. What are you, dumb? What do you want to kill yourself?
This villager spazzes out on the Tusken.
I mean, it's an explosive. Like, he had the right, but like, you can't just like, tensions are high. You can't just freak
God
out.
Thank God Cobb was there. Yeah. He gets right in the villager's face, and it's just like, dude, it was an accident. Let it go.
Spells
we're about to take on a dragon. There are bigger fish to fry.
Oh, there's always a bigger fish. Where's that from?
No idea.
Come on. That's from Phantom Menace, Qui-Gon Jinn. When he's when they're underneath the water, the fish has him.
Okay.
Been a while since I watched Phantom Menace.
It has been a minute.
I know people hate it, I enjoy it.
I don't hate it at all, but it has been a while. So we got the whole squad marching to the Sarlacc pit, and that must have taken forever because it took an entire flashback for them to speeder bike there, and they were walking by foot.
Yeah, true.
So one raider is up there with a bantha, and he's just checking on the pit and can confirm that the crate dragon is currently in there sleeping, and Cobb is just like, listen closely, and you can literally hear this thing breathing. Mm-hmm. That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's Mando, how big it is.
Mando just says, all right, let's get to work then. Yes. He starts laying out the plan.
Yeah, so they start burying explosives in the ground. So we eventually learn that it has a supposed weak spot in its underbelly that the explosives are meant to, you know, blow up and kill the dragon.
They're just taking the Tuskens at their word because they've been studying it for generations. And right. They kind of know some stuff about it.
They knew where the hideout was. They knew that it slept. They had all this information. So why not trust them on this little bit of information?
So like you said, the belly is the only weak spot. And this is going to be the plan. They're going to bury the charges. They're going to wake up the dragon. They're going to get it to charge out at them. So they're going to draw it out. And then when it's far enough out and the belly is above the explosives, they're going to hit the detonator. So it's
pretty straightforward plan.
Plans always sound good until they start, you know.
It obviously was not going to go that well. So eventually they wake up the beast. And
we have three Tuskens because they're trying to piss it off and draw it out. Yeah. So instead of the typical one, they send three. And they're pretty loud.
Yeah. And you think for people who live on the sand, you'd be able to run on the sand without tripping.
Right.
They trip every time. They turn around, they're running. One of the three just trips and falls. And of course, the crate dragon eats it. But now the crate dragon's out. They have
the scorpions.
Yeah, all the villagers.
So we eat the one Tusken raider, and then everybody starts unloading. They have the scorpions kind of getting shot at the beast. But to Mando's displeasure, the crate dragon kind of retreats back into the pit. And
he yells, "Dank Ferrick! It's going back in."
That's where we get the Dank Ferrick. Yeah, I thought that was so like unique. And
I wonder if he picked that up from the Mithril fledgling when he takes them in.
That's what I'm thinking too, which I think is just kind of a nod to the writing.
Definitely. So definitely cool. Is.
Dank Ferrick, we were talking about it before, I think we were recording, is like a very specific, just generic exclamation word, like akin to gosh darn it or
guitar or I swear to guitar.
Like, yeah, it's just a thing, but it's specific to the Mithril race is kind of where the reference is originated. And episode 1, chapter 1, Mando is taking in a member of the Mithril race. That is his first bounty mission we see. So Mando, I think it's just an ode to
Mando writing. Just cursing in other languages. So cool. So yeah, he says Dank Ferrick. It's going back in.
And Cobb wants to hit the detonator. He says, this is our best shot. Like, I'm going to hit it. Mando says, no, dude, we have one shot at this. We got to draw it out. And then the whole squad starts unloading. We have like Molotov cocktails, like getting thrown.
Like some explosive.
Yeah, the harpoons are hitting and they're trying to pull it out. And they do get its attention. They piss it off enough. And Day, this is where he's like, you know what? Get off me. I'm going to puke on all of you. Spits up acid on all of them.
And they melt instantly. Instantaneously too.
It's so many of them.
Yeah, they're there, and then they're not in an instant.
And Mando and Cobb don't even flinch. They're like, not yet, steady.
Yeah, they're waiting.
And then Mando eventually says, "Now." They hit the detonator, and it goes off, and it injures them because he does go down into the sand, and that's all they see.
But we know, and they even confirm it. Yeah. They know as well as we do, it's not dead. It's not over.
They both say, yeah, I don't think this thing's dead. So, and then it reemerges after a couple seconds at the top of the kind of just hill surrounding the Sarlacc pit that it lives in.
This reminded me like of something straight out of like a roller coaster, like something out of like a Universal theme park.
I was thinking like a water park.
Yeah, exactly.
The stereotypical jungle gym at like a water park where it just like spews out every once on the
I was thinking too. Yeah,
except it's not fun at all.
Yeah,
no, you're gonna die. You're gonna die.
So it hits them with one more shower of acid, and they're just getting slaughtered at this.
Yeah, well, Cobb even says they're being picked off like a bunch of womp rats.
Yeah, there.
And
it
then
is.
He jetpacks up with Mando.
So this was cool. This was dope.
Him.
How they
I will
take
say
off.
For not being a Mandalorian, Cobb Vanth knows how to use the armor.
He's
very
good.
Well.
Oh, he's good
for sure. He's doing the armor proud for sure. Oh, he ain't no schlub.
Doing Boba proud.
But yeah, so they jetpack up to kind of confront the crate dragon, and they just start hitting it with blasters, kind of around where its eye is, and
If they're, we know anything from The Boys, the eye is the weak spot any always. Big invincible creature.
Or just a giant speedboat you can run into or the side of it.
My only weakness, a giant speedboat.
Yeah, damn.
So they do piss off the great dragon, and it does take a chomp at him, but they fly off and they get it away, and they get it to stop attacking the villagers.
Yeah, it goes back underground, and then they kind of don't hear it or see it for another couple of seconds, and then we hear some rumbling, and then it resurfaces behind them. So it's completely out of its lair at this point, and it's just
ready to kill everyone.
Yeah, going crazy. This thing's terrifying. It can travel under sand, and literally everything is sand on Tatooine.
This puts the I already forget what's the rhinoceros kind of looking beast that Mando went.
The Mudhorn.
Yeah, this puts the Mudhorn just. Makes it look like an ant, honestly.
Whoa, dude. But Mando was able to take on this beast. He could not handle the
Mudhorn.
I think
I was reading something, too, that, obviously from the explosion we could tell, but the Krayt Dragon's armor is just so much more dense than the Mudhorn's. And the Mudhorn's known for having intense armor, but
yeah, they're not, a shame. They're not doing anything. Mando looks over. He sees that there's a Bantha with all the bombs on it.
You know exactly where this is going.
Yeah, He says, I've got an idea, get its attention, which Cobb does. And
then he says,
you're going to take care of the child. And Cobb's like, what are you going to do? He's like, I don't know, but wish me luck. Flies away.
He breaks the jetpack so that Cobb just shoots off in the air to get to safety, essentially. Mm-hmm. And now that the Krayt Dragon is pissed off, it's going right for the Mandalorian, who is holding on to the Bantha with dear life, and the Krayt Dragon swallows him.
So Mando sets the charges that are strapped to the Bantha, which he was not intending for the Bantha to break free. Like, it was originally in a post, right. I think he was going to duck out of the way, but then it broke free of the post, and he had to hold it there.
I was just thinking it wasn't supposed
to be a sacrifice. Okay. He was supposed to just draw it in, and then probably, are you with me on that, Paul? Like, he was just going to dive out?
It makes a whole lot of sense, because he was saying, like, no.
Yeah, he said shit. Yeah.
I didn't realize that until now. I do remember him kind of literally about to jump out of the way, and then he breaks free.
So the Bantha breaks free of its restraints, forcing Mando to grab its tether, and then he literally has to allow himself to get swallowed for his plan to work. There's a long pause. It's a super long pause.
And I was like, oh my God, Mando's dead.
Yeah. Right. I totally thought Mando was dead here.
And of course, it breaches out of the sand and like a whale coming out of water, and it shows Mando using his rifle blaster to electrocute from the inside, which I can't even imagine how painful that would be.
That's an awesome like bayonet attachment is just a like taser. A taser.
That sniper is so cool. Yeah. It's a blaster sniper, whatever.
I love all the blaster rifles. They're really awesome.
I love it.
And as he's tasing it and flying out of the mouth with the jetpack, he hits the detonator and it blows up from the inside.
Yay.
And this time, it's really good.
It's dumb.
And you know what? I have to say, because I said I would. Emily, if you're listening, you called this from the very beginning. She said, like, when they needed to go kill the Krayt Dragon, she was like, why don't they just
make it swallow explosives?
Yeah, and then blow it up. And I was like, that's probably what they're going to do. And then they did this whole charade. I was like, that would have been probably straight.
That is so true, because they already knew that it literally swallows Bantha's whole. Like,
I mean, that takes a lot away
from the episode, but I'm glad they didn't come to that conclusion. But like,
I'm sure they didn't want to sacrifice an animal. You know, I'm sure like they're trying to save their Banthas and not just trying to give it up.
The Tuskens had been feeding them to them for free.
No,
I digress. So the Krayt Dragon is dead, and we get a cut shot of the Tuskens that are harvesting this enormous Krayt Dragon carcass, as was promised in the deal. They're you know,
harvesting
taking out
the
hunks
meat,
of meat
and they find
which takes us to Mando, who has a nice hunk of meat.
You gotta give
one that comes next.
Okay.
I would not dare skip that. Yeah, come on, like, now.
Come on. They got
so Mando packages the hunk of meat, or has the packaged hunk of meat that Baby Yoda is kind of picking at. And then we get kind of the goodbye scene between Cobb and Mando. Cobb walks up, gives him the armor, Boba Fett's armor, and says, hey, I hope our paths cross again.
We all want to see Cobb Vanth again. He came off very, from the beginning, he was total badass. Love to see him.
By the way, I haven't said, he is the same actor that plays Danny Cordray from The Office, who is like the really, really, more handsome Jim that Pam used to date.
Yeah, yeah.
Who blew Danny Pam Cordray off, but then Pam thought she...
Yeah, yeah. And he's like the best salesman.
I never noticed that. But
what I was going to say earlier,
Timothy Olyphant.
I forgot. I was like, of course, Cobb Vanth is his badass, and he's the only decently good looking person in the entire village.
So yeah. far, yeah.
Yeah, that's how Makes you sense, qualify man. For Marshall. Is you just gotta just be good
the best
looking.
Yeah.
So we also get the Tusken Raiders pulling out of the carcass of the Krayt Dragon a giant ass pearl.
Yay! Yes, everyone wins.
Yeah, which is really cool because I assume it's like, you know.
So yeah, I have exactly what it is. If you want this, okay. Is first off, I want to say that Cobb, the last thing he says is, "Tell your people I wasn't the one that broke that armor."
Oh yeah,
that was funny. So
yeah. That's sweet.
I really love Cobb. He's coming back.
He will, I think, 100%, especially because he said it.
Yeah,
it's gonna happen.
Yeah, but yes, the Tuskens pull out this giant pearl from the Krayt Dragon carcass, and this is straight off of Wikipedia, which is the Star Wars Wikipedia. So, Krayt Dragons had a very long lifespan, and during the course of their life, would ingest stones to assist in digestion. The corrosive digestive fluid would break down and eventually dissolve the rocks. Rarely, a stone would contain a kyber crystal that would remain in a beast's gut, being refined over the life of the dragon until it formed a smooth, small sphere. Do you guys know what kyber crystals are? Of course.
Yeah, they create the lightsabers, right?
Correct. Okay, so because the pearls were formed from kyber, they could be used in lightsabers. A lightsaber equipped with one of these pearls emitted a very powerful and destructive blade that emitted a howling sound when it ignited.
What?
Does that sound like a sword we know?
Darksaber.
Bingo.
Yes.
I was literally thinking where you're going with this. I was like, Darksaber 2.0? Like, yes. Is this happening right now?
I did not know this at all, but like when they found the pearl, I had to be like, okay, what is this pearl?
Oh, this is so
I'm
cool.
telling you, boys, Wikipedia has it going
doing
on.
What you're doing. Oh, yeah. I can't, now that you're doing this, I need to do this as well. So, next time I watch an episode, even the smallest thing, I'm going to have to look it up.
Moff Gideon from the first season, at the end, when he pulls that out, that's what that is.
That, not confirmed, but like I said, one of these pearls, a lightsaber equipped with one of these pearls emits a very powerful and destructive blade. That's the Darksaber. It's very unique, destructive, that emitted a howling sound when ignited. And it kind of does have it's almost like Chidori twiddles.
Yeah, when he busts open out of it, you could hear the Darksaber, for sure.
That's so cool.
Oh my God.
And
we have the potential for another one.
That is not confirmed, but that's, that's a theory that I have. It kind of fits the description.
Well, I mean,
busting theories out real quick. Darksaber 1.0 gets destroyed. Darksaber 2.0 is birthed and given to Mando.
No, I mean, this pearl is way too big to put in a lightsaber. I was thinking they would use it for some other type of
I think the Darksaber is going to have some staying power. That thing's been around forever.
This is just putting on the tinfoil hat right here.
The Mandos had Mandalorians before pre-Empire. They had Darksabers as well.
No, there's only been one Darksaber.
Very unique. Yeah.
Really?
It's a unique saber.
It was created by a Mandalorian who was the first Jedi. The first Jedi Mandalorian. Yeah.
I love this universe.
Yeah, well, man.
I was a little late with dropping the preview episode, but you should listen to it because we get into the Darksaber a little bit. So
it has some tie-ins through Clone Wars and like Star Wars Rebels.
But there is only one Darksaber.
Really watch Rebels and Clone Wars. Yeah.
Just to let you know, whoever wields the Darksaber is the ruler of Mandalore. So
it's very symbolic in that sense.
It's not like, actually, it's symbolic.
So the lightsaber isn't a Jedi thing anymore. It's a Mandalorian thing, and kind of, it's their thing. Their leader also has this symbolic.
So Moff Gideon could technically be the ruler of Mandalore.
I was going to say, do you think he killed Mandalorian and took it, or do you think he was?
It hasn't been in the hand of a Mandalorian.
So I believe we are going to get the character who we last saw wielding the Darksaber. Her name is Bo-Katan Kryze. We talk about this in the preview, but if we're connecting the dots, something happened to Bo-Katan Kryze, who was a Mandalorian, and we talk about it. She was a good ruler. You know, she was very pro-Mandalorian for unity of the people in general.
Nationalistic.
But that was pre-episode 4, so almost a decade ago. So between then and now, something happened on Mandalore, probably an Imperial takeover. And it's very realistic that Moff Gideon is the current warden, of Mandalore. And if there's no...
Warden's a good word for that.
If there's no... Chancellor Palpatine anymore, no figurehead for the Empire, it's just all these warlords, he is the de facto ruler of Mandalore, which is a very, very powerful position, and he has the freaking Darksaber, which is dope.
Yeah, that alone will make you powerful.
That's what I was saying beforehand. This is one of the things, obviously, we will obviously get it, but I hope to see more Moff Gideon very soon. I want to know how he gets into the acquisition.
Now, yeah, we don't know if we're going to get him soon, but we will get
him. Yeah, we'll definitely get him in this season is what I'm saying.
You know who we did get at the end of this episode?
Oh, yeah, we didn't. We didn't get to the final scene yet.
Yeah, how could we not? Okay, so Mando is speeding out of there. The triumphant music starts to play, and we kind of just see this shadowy, bald figure overlooking Mando on a speeder bike, and we see the silhouette. We see him from behind, and then he turns around and walks directly to the camera, and that's the end of the episode.
Lay it on me, Daddy. Lay it
this
on
This is
me.
None other than Boba Fett, and he officially has the IMDb credit.
That's so awesome.
Okay. So it's already confirmed, but yeah, it's the same actor that has voiced the clones and Jango Fett and Boba Fett for the past 15 years. His name is Temuera Morrison.
Yeah, he was in episode two and three.
Yeah, he's Commander Cody. He takes off his helmet. Cool.
So I did not notice that at the time, but once he told us beforehand who it was, and once he told us, even still, I'm just like, this is fucking hype. This is awesome Easter, like another Easter egg, huge one, and it's all going to tie in.
Hey, I love that he's reprising the role too, because he was an awesome Commander Cody. This is Boba Fett was the one unedited clone from Jango Fett's base DNA. So it's Boba Fett. This is crazy. And you know, he doesn't have any of the iconic armor because now Mando has his armor, but he has one of the blaster rifles and what looks like a staff or something, like a Tusken Raider staff, I think. They kind of carry around that kind of
looks
stuff.
Like a bludgeoning weapon or something like
but yeah
that.
this is Boba Fett.
I watched it twice and I didn't realize it, and then we got together to record and I was like, who was that guy in the back? I didn't look it up.
Pete Toms
goes, that's Boba Fett. I'm like, what? I go immediately back to look it again. His face is so scarred up that at first it looks like something completely different, but then you're like, oh my god,
it makes sense.
That's exactly the same actor. Which I'm going to have to double check this. Is this OG Doctore? The one?
Oh, wow.
From Gods
of
the
Arena. I'm not a guy, but that'd be crazy.
He looks, I think he is OG Doctore with the scar across his face.
Fact checking right now. Be patient, Bingetown TV.
Because that would be a wild connection.
It's just weird how we cover all these podcasts and, you know, not only do they tie into to each other, but
yeah. Dude, if we ever got him on the pod, interviewed him.
Oh my God, it is. Oh my God. I didn't like say no way because they totally looked alike and they are alike.
Spartacus was so long ago, but
the character he played in Spartacus, Doctore, was supposed to be an older Doctore. So I think the character that he played, Doctore, was older than like Commander Cody was, so I didn't think the ages lined up. But yes, Paul, to wear
him. You're right. If we ever got him on the podcast, we would be hammering that dude with questions. he would be.
My gosh,
he would be around for a while.
Let's go.
That's I'm awesome, so man. That is a great connection.
Nice.
All right.
You've been on the ball, man. You're picking up on a lot of these things.
Wow.
The voice actors
that's
and the
so
actual
funny
actors.
Because I was looking at his IMDb and that wasn't even one of his like main credits. So
it totally should be. For those of you who didn't watch Spartacus, go back, watch it, and listen to early Bingetown.
OG Doctore.
Dude, crazy.
Are you kidding me?
So what do you think are we gonna get in chapter 10 next episode?
It's impossible to guess, right?
See, if we're following the same trend as season one, then there's going to be a lot of
filler almost.
Not filler, just standalone episodes. Yeah, but I think season two is going to keep giving us more story. I mean, we already have Boba Fett confirmation.
Do you think he'll be in the next episode?
That's what
chapter?
I'm thinking. I'm not sure if that was a teaser. I don't think the next episode is going to be the Boba Fett episode.
Correct.
Is what I'm trying to say.
Correct.
But
I'm with you.
Probably later in the season, definitely. Next episode, I think it'll probably be another standalone.
I'm just
thinking
of all the characters that they've confirmed, and it's just like this show is going to pick up so quickly. Yeah. Like with now that we have Boba Fett confirmed, we already know that Ahsoka's confirmed. Like we just have all these characters, big characters.
Obi-Wan confirmed.
Well, you know what? We we might be on Tatooine next episode because we didn't see him talk to Mato and like fly away. And usually when he leaves the planet, we see him in his ship. It's kind of iconic. It's a thing. That's how they change scenes. He leaves on the ship and then lands.
I was going to say, basically, my next guest for next episode, he still needs to find a Mandalorian. So he's going to go back to Mos Eisley's, probably talk to Mon, maybe go around, see if there's any connections there. And then he's probably going to take off to some random planet.
Well, unless Boba Fett is trying to get his armor back because he's obviously been watching.
He's going to be tailing.
Knows that he has the armor. Well, is he going to be tailing? Or maybe he would be interested in talking to Mando. And Mos Eisley is where everybody is. So Boba Fett would be able to seek out Mando in Mos Eisley.
And Boba Fett's been
around. So very well.
And we know that Boba Fett's old as dirt. He might know some things about...
Old as dirt, dude.
Not old as dirt, but he's one of the older characters so far we've seen. So he might have some information on Baby Yoda and whatever. Like you're saying, he might be a useful resource in the future.
Wait, are we going to get a Boba Fett and Obi-Wan interaction? Because that hasn't happened since Boba Fett
watched... No way. Is that even possible?
Wait, yeah, from episode two... When Boba Fett or Jango Fett's head got cut off by Mace Windu and Boba Fett went up and like hugged his head.
Yeah.
That was the last time you saw Obi-Wan. Dude, I just love this universe.
Yeah.
I'm not ruling it out. I'm not ruling it out, but you're right. Yeah. For some reason in my mind, I just thought Obi-Wan was just dead.
He does have a vendetta against Mace Windu specifically for that. I'm not sure if Boba Fett like would have any aggression towards Obi-Wan for that, because Boba Fett in the extended universe is kind of this like cool, reasonable guy. He's just like the fucking dude.
He almost killed Obi-Wan.
Yeah.
With the ship
and I only got into it because it's all extended universe. So like a lot of people that only watch the movies wouldn't know, but he like escaped the Sarlacc pit in the extended universe, and the only explanation is because he had this dope armor and he's a badass part. Very resourceful.
Yeah,
and a jetpack. The picture is literally him jetpacking out of the Sarlacc.
I actually have seen that really comic strip. It's so cool.
But yeah, George Lucas, I believe there's a quote where he says, I had no idea the fans were going to go so crazy for Boba Fett. Otherwise, I would have made him, you know, more of a thing, but I made the first movie that he was in, and I got this feedback, but he was already kind of just a bounty hunter and not really relevant.
And it honestly works out just because now we're not going to be, you know, we haven't been shoved Boba Fett for years in our face, you know, like this is just something that was just an ode to the movies. And now we can get a little bit more of Boba Fett. So I'm all in for it. I'm glad that he didn't just bury us with Boba Fett.
Everybody loves Boba Fett, even Peter Griffin.
Yeah,
but he goes. Yeah. He was. I would bet you all my Star Wars figures, except Boba Fett.
No matter how
sure I am, I never bet the Fett.
Yeah, shout out.
There's a lot of Family Guy overlap to Star Wars which I think you're gonna love.
The Star Wars episodes in Family Guy are unbelievably accurate to little scenes
Those were the only Family Guy episodes I had actually ever like back in the day on my iPod Nano or whatever, like early iPhone 3, whatever. Like those were the only episodes I had downloaded.
Everybody loves Star Wars. Yeah, everybody loves Star
overall Wars. Though. Great fucking episode, and I'm like just talking on the podcast just gets me fucking so excited for the next
episode. I just want to keep talking about
it. I know.
Yeah, it was a good one. Yeah, I really like this to start off the season. It was a standalone episode, but I love that we already have confirmed Boba Fett in episode one of season two. Like I think this season is going to start moving along some more meaty
and
plot.
Especially with the fact, sorry to cut you off again,
no,
but especially with the fact that I'm pretty sure the next all the episodes coming up are going to be like, you know, the 30 minute little over 30 minutes, so they're definitely going to have to be, like I was saying, pumping out content in each of these episodes with all these confirmed characters. So looking forward to it.
I'm hyped, man. I'm hyped. I want to see some more adorable Baby Yoda. Obviously, that's coming up.
I
don't think he's going to get to the point where he brings him back to his own race this season. That just seems so
I think
far.
That I think
we were talking that on the preview as well.
Yeah. And I said exactly Dave said, I want to see that. But I said, don't hold your breath. That's kind of like part of the character.
Yeah. That's like the end of the Mandalorian show.
Yes, I think that will be endgame, which that'll be a great payoff.
What I talked about also on the preview is that they're already in pre-production for season three of Mandalorian.
Love it.
And fans were already saying that season four is already kind of like not in pre-production, but like being talked about. And then that would be either season three or four would be the season of Baby Yoda.
I'll tell you what.
Get the contracts written up.
Yeah, baby.
I don't, 3 out of 3 people at this table would not pay for Disney Plus if not for this show.
And I agree.
I don't think we're the only one. So
this is legitimately the only reason why I have, I don't have a need for Disney Plus, and Mandalorian has been one of my favorite shows so far.
The only reason I got it.
Yeah.
No disrespect to Disney Plus. They have great stuff if you're looking.
Like they have The Simpsons.
The Greatest Showman. I don't know if you guys have ever seen it.
No.
Yeah. But this show is a huge draw for, I think, a lot of people to be getting Disney Plus, and I think it's been just so positively received that it's not going away anytime soon.
100%
again, and clap to Dave Filoni and John Favreau.
Absolutely. Yeah, they still got season two off to a great start, and I think we're good on the episode. Keep an eye out for our continued coverage of The Mandalorian all season long. I feel like this is an appropriate time to plug Spartacus, because Temuera Morrison was OG Doctore, so love you, dude. And as always, if you like what you heard, give Binchtown TV a follow on Twitter and Instagram, and subscribe to our show on Spotify and the Apple Podcast app. Once again, we are Binchtown TV, and thanks for listening.
And this is the way.